This is an ABC podcast.
Live across Victoria.
On ABC Listen.
Your smart speaker.
And on your radio.
This is 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
The conversations that are important to you.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Mary Guerin.
Good morning. Well, you may not be normally interested in the AFL or AFL Tribunal, but every so often there's a case that jumps up, makes you think about the principles of justice. So to bring you up to speed, umpire Nick Foote alleged that Port Adelaide's Zach Butters said, "How much are they paying you?" after he awarded a free kick against Butters when he was playing St Kilda on Sunday night. And Butters vehemently denied it, saying, he said something like, "Surely that's not a free kick," or "Why did you pay that?" Nothing, and this is crucial, nothing was picked up on a mic. So there's no evidence. So there are two questions. One, in a case with no evidence and two equally adamant testimonies, should it have ever gone to the tribunal? It did last night. They delivered their ruling that they believed the umpire. And the second question is, once it does go to the tribunal, why does the AFL tribunal side with the umpire over the player? What are the principles there? And is it fair? I'm Mary Guerin. This is The Conversation Hour. And I wanted to break this down today because I think it's fascinating. It says something about justice. It says something about the AFL. I want you to tell me what it says something about. If I say something to you, you hear something offensive, we both go to the court. Should you be believed because you're an officer of the court? Because as we'll hear, part of the legalistic thinking about this is that the AFL does give due weight, and we'll figure out what that means, to an umpire. We're still waiting to hear about the actual reasoning from the tribunal, because in another quirk of this instance, they ran out of time last night, and they're going to hand out their decisions, the reasoning behind their decisions, to the parties. And then, of course, that will become public. We'll get the latest on this, but I want to hear your thought. Also, would you like an AI boss instead of the real deal? Maybe you'd get along better with an AI version of your boss. Maybe you'd get into more trouble. Bringing this up because if you are in Meta, your boss, Mark Zuckerberg, is reportedly working on an AI version of himself. He can answer all your queries as your boss as an AI version. This clone is being trained on his mannerisms and tone, and so he could give these public statements. Maybe he could be up for that, I don't know, discussion about your pay rise. Would an AI boss be better to deal with than your boss? What would you fear about this? And on a more serious note, is this the way we're going? What if we do get to negotiations? We've already talked in this program about being in job interviews with an AI interviewer. What about when it's your boss? Can we make ourselves some AI clones to deal with a boss? Maybe that's the way. 1300 222 774 is the number to call. Also, getting onto a happier sporting theme, we are going to speak with basketball megastar Lauren Jackson about the four Aussies whose lives are about to change. They've just been snapped up by the WNBA draft. Next, should the AFL tribunal be dealing and ruling on a case where there's no evidence except the adamant word of both parties?
On 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Mary Guerin.
I'm joined now by James Gallagher, Chief Executive Officer of the AFL Players Association. Hello, James. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Mary. Thanks for having me on.
First off, the AFLPA has been pretty adamant that this has been the wrong decision. Can you sum up why?
Yeah, I think In simple terms, Zach's got a really strong view of what he said. He was the person that said it. And there's also some elements around that are supportive of his version of events. I think when you watch the vision back when the incident occurred on Sunday night, it's really clear that both Zach and his teammate Ollie Wines were really bemused almost why a 50-metre penalty was paid against them. It was clear they had no real idea as to why that would have been paid. Zach did an interview in the immediate aftermath of the game before he even knew what the allegation was against him, and what he said in that interview was entirely consistent with his evidence at the tribunal, and then his teammate Ollie Wines, who was in the immediate vicinity, also had consistent testimony. So I think when you balance all those things together, it's extraordinarily difficult and disappointing to understand how the tribunal would have been satisfied enough to uphold the charge. And so that's kind of the core reasons why we're really deeply disappointed in the decision.
Mm. So body language, essentially, and the believability of the shock, not to wanting to, you know, promote acting on the field or whatever, but this, do you believe, should have been taken into account?
Oh, I think there was, you know, real and obvious reactions that occurred at the time, which probably showed that the players, you know, they certainly didn't think that what they'd said had crossed the line. And, you know, I think it's consistent with the evidence they've been given. The umpire may well have misheard it. You know, that's not uncommon. I know I personally mishear things all the time, and we're talking about a nuance of words here when the umpire's focused on umpiring, the players are focused on playing, and there's near enough to 50,000 people in the stands yelling and screaming. So I think that's entirely understandable that there might be slightly different perspectives about the words that were said. But I think all of the other factors and evidence around Zach's version here make it quite clear that he certainly hasn't said what's been alleged.
Mm. You're listening to James Gallagher from the Players Association, and we're talking about the Butters Tribunal decision last night. So there's kind of two elements here, which we'll get to. The first one about whether it or not it should have gone to the tribunal, but in the tribunal, we're going to be speaking soon with a sports law expert on this, but it seems to be a long-standing principle that due weight must be given to the umpire, which I think translates as more weight should be given to the umpire in a tribunal. Is that your understanding of the principle, and what do you think of it?
I'm not sure if that's a standing principle, but it's probably in some ways the concern. I think our players are tremendous advocates in the game. They're extraordinarily important to the game, and they're in almost every case, extraordinarily honest. And I think we would hope that when they front up to the tribunal, there's an understanding that that's how they present, that, you know, appropriate weight, consistent weight, even weight would be given to what they say as opposed to any other person. And I think when Zach's the one that's actually said the words, you know, he's best placed to know what came out of his mouth more than anybody else. And I think that's a really important part of all of this. For us,
do you think in cases where it is he said, essentially, as it's been boiled down to, that there should be an instruction to umpires to not take it to the tribunal?
I wouldn't necessarily go that far. I think there may be situations where these matters do need to be dealt with through the tribunal. But what I'd say is in this situation, we think this shouldn't have got to the tribunal. I think there was it would seem very clear there was a misunderstanding of what was heard here. I think that, as I mentioned, all of the evidence, save for, you know, what the umpire thinks he heard, points to that. I think there was an opportunity for the parties to be brought together in the aftermath of the game, whether it's straight after or at some point yesterday, and try and work through those differences. Listen is really important in this, rather than be pitched in a situation which is adversarial, and ultimately, someone was going to lose out of that. And I just don't think that was ever going to be helpful in this situation. I think it could have been navigated in a better way, which, we might not be dealing with the level of fallout we are today.
And James, before I let you go, have we heard yet about the reasoning from the tribunal?
No, I don't believe so. I don't, as recently as probably 10 or 15 minutes ago, I checked in on that, and I certainly haven't seen them as yet, but anticipate that will be sometime today. And you know, Port Adelaide have been really strong in their support of Zach, and they'll manage, you know, whether they appeal and if they appeal running that, but our team and the lawyers in our team will certainly support Port Adelaide. And I've had some dialogue with their chief executive this morning on that, last night and again this morning on that front. So yeah, we'll have a role to play, but potentially a bit more in the background, helping them work out how best to go about any appeal should they wish to bring it on.
Yeah, we'll keep an eye on your actions as well. James Gallagher, thank you.
Thanks, Mary. Cheers.
James is the Chief Executive Officer of the Players Association. I want to bring in now Jack Anderson, who's a Professor of Law at the Uni of Melbourne, who specialises in sports law and who's been listening to that. Hi, Jack. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on.
What do you think about the two issues here? Let's go to the second one. If it goes to the tribunal, what is happening? What are the principles that the tribunal is looking at if this comes before them? And there's no microphone evidence, there's just the testimony. He's very adamant on both sides. What's the principle that you believe the AFL tribunal went to last night in going in favour of the umpire?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, it is extraordinary that there is no audio evidence, etc. But look, normally in these things, the presumption is, and there's very good reasons for this, the presumption is that what the umpire has said is correct. Remember, umpires are the only neutral arbitrators on the field of play. And so there's very good reasons why that presumption would apply.
And can I just interrupt you there, Jack? Will absolutely take as a given that he is the arbitrator and, in fact, that he is neutral. And, you know, and I don't want anyone on text to come about me that.
I'm sure you get plenty of views on that.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. But even assuming he's the arbitrator and he or she is neutral, isn't there still the understanding that this neutral arbitrator might have genuinely misheard something?
And that's the point I was just going to make. Mm. Any presumption can be rebutted, you know, and in this case, the rebuttal comes from all those things you discussed with James, reaction of the player, etc. But just before we get that, remember, when we say there's no evidence, it's not entirely correct. I mean, the umpire was cross-examined here. He was asked, you know, did you mishear this? He was adamant he didn't. He said, I was only a metre away. I recognise that there's a lot of background noise, etc. He's an experienced umpire. So that's what he said. But as I say, any presumption can be rebutted. And you've seen the reaction of the player. You've seen standing beside Zach Butters, as Ollie Wines, Brownlow medalists, etc. They're both bewildered and perplexed. And the player has said, you know, that he said a certain thing. The umpire has heard something completely different. And what's interesting about this is sometimes in these tribunals, and the AFL has another tribunal ongoing, is a player says something that sounds like a word that they shouldn't have said. But here, there's a complete disparity between what both parties seem to have said was said. So that's interesting in that sense. And What I think is interesting, though, as well as this, and we'll have to see the reasons for this as well, is that what was said was, essentially, are they paying you? And the umpire said that kind of undermined my, not only my authority, but my integrity. If it's that serious, well, is a 1,500 fine then appropriate? So it's interesting that, is there a balance being struck here between, yes, we go with the umpire, but only to a certain extent. And I wonder if that... So we need the reasons to tease out this.
Well, that's interesting. If that were the case, then it's a little bit of worst of both worlds in a way, to go on one side, but not enough that you don't find more, even weirder. Just to go back to something that you said about the evidence, James Gallagher was asserting that the body language, as you say, the bewilderment, the very obvious bewilderment of Zach Butters and his teammates should be evidence. Is that right?
And that would be taken into account. As I say, you know, the presumption is the referee umpire is correct. But then you can see, can that be rebutted? And the player says, look, I was utterly bewildered. The player standing beside me was utterly bewildered by it. I didn't say that. The umpire, I'm not saying in any way that the umpire is lying, but I am saying that the umpire misheard what I said, and that's where we're at, and therefore there shouldn't be a punishment. And it actually, in a way, I do agree strongly with James that, okay, there are certain things that must and should go to a tribunal, but there are other things that you would wonder whether or not the parties in question should sit down and chat it out. Now, from what I gather, there was attempts to do that, but you'd wonder, given all the adverse publicity that has flowed from this, whether or not that would have been a better scenario.
Mm. We're speaking with Jack Anderson, who's a sports law lecturer at Melbourne Uni. We're talking about the tribunal case last night, of course, concerning Zach Butters. Gail, you've called in from Bendigo. What do you think?
I've just got two things to say. The first one, just listening to your law professor, an umpire being, you know, granted, you know, the arbitrator and making their decision as final, you cannot arbitrate on a matter that you are a party to. The senior umpire might be able to arbitrate that one, but that doesn't hold water. The second point is the police cannot launch a criminal case without due evidence. There was no due evidence. If he said, he said, everybody shake hands, go home. Sorry if you thought I said that. That's not what I said. That's where it should have ended. Instead, they've wasted how many millions of dollars going to the tribunal.
Gail, thank you for raising that. Jack, what do you say to Gail, that the arbitrator isn't an arbitrator, but I guess what Gail is saying, he's more of a witness in this case, and especially when there's no evidence?
Yeah, I mean, look, this is, first of all, and I appreciate how seriously people, particularly in
we're
Melbourne,
digging deep here, Jack.
Take funny, but this is not a criminal case. We're not involving the police here. This is a game of footy where we appoint umpires to look at the rules of the game. The umpire felt that he was verbally abused and dissent was shown towards him by a player. He reported that, and it's up to the tribunal to decide. And the presumption is that that umpire who you have appointed to officially preside over the game is correct, and you test that evidence. And they did test that evidence, and they didn't believe the player, and they believed the umpire. And that's where we're at. And it's a $1,500 fine that has resulted. But I think there's also two other points that we need to kind of focus on. This is, first of all, you know, the AFL has battled against dissent against umpires for a while. They just don't like the look of it. And I can, you know, we all understand that. But there's a wider thing, you know, that this weekend, lots of the kind of community sports will start up, you know, again for the AFL season. It's difficult to retain umpires. It's difficult to get umpires. And one of the reasons is, and you're talking to someone who sits in community football tribunals all the time, is because of umpire abuse and dissent. So I think one of the points, no, I'm not putting everything on Zach Butters in any way, but one of the points here is, look, we've all been coached in sport to know that, you know, they don't always, umpires get it right, but they're never wrong, and that you have to accept their decisions. And this is part of that wider issue, I think, as well. So I think it's important to see that in that greater context.
Jack Anderson, I know we're not playing for sheep stations, as it were, on this issue, but it's got a lot of people riled up. Thank you for leaning into the conversation.
Good. Thank you.
That's Jack Anderson, who's a sports law expert at Melbourne Uni. Let's go now to Joel Bowden, who's two-time All-Australian, two-time Best and Fairest Richmond player, of course. Joel, you've been listening in there to all of these arguments. Do you believe, like Jack was saying there, and what Gary is saying on text, need to go with the umpire every time? This is a sports game. What do you think of that principle?
Yeah, good morning. I haven't seen an umpire change their mind. In fact, we never see an umpire change their mind once they've made a decision. But I think one of the big issues is that we're not talking about the football. Unfortunately, we've had Gather Round, which was really well played, contested, some games played in the rain, some played in the sun. Peter Malinowskis, of all the things he can control, the one thing he can't control is the weather. But We're now talking about an umpire and a decision, and unfortunately it's distracting us from what is the great spectacle of AFL. Now, the umpire made a decision, let's move on, but there's going to be probably the next 24 or 36 hours of commentary about what someone said during a game of footy when the score was reasonably close, when St Kilda were 56 points and Port Adelaide were 31. I'd rather be talking about the game. I'd rather be talking about that St Kilda were winning and that Port Adelaide needed to do better to win.
Yeah, indeed. That is another conversation, it's true. But sticking with this one, I think also another really quirky aspect is that they haven't given out their reasonings. They ran out of time last night. The Silks, who are running the show, just ran out of time, and so we're waiting till the next day. What do you think about the process?
Well, the process is spelled out. I sat on the match review panel for 3 years when I was working at the AFL. This is about 10 years ago now. And the process is really clear. It goes through the MRP. This one was directly referred for abuse or insulting language towards an umpire. There is a financial grading for it, which means that it's going to be financial. The bit that I worry about is that it's only a $1,500 fine. I'm going to say only. I mean, for an AFL player who's on something like $500,000 to $1 million, and Zach Butters is about to get probably the biggest contract of his life. So it's not an enormous amount of money. The bit that I worry about, again, is the material impact on the game. Now, if the umpire heard something that was insulting or that was abusive towards him, did he have to pay a 50-metre penalty? Because at that point in the game, the ball was inside the forward 50. A player had a free kick that they were about to have a shot at goal. That makes it a lay down was there and an automatic goal. Does that change the course of the game rather than the umpire saying, I've heard something, I'm going to go and report it after the game, or I'm going to take a note now and report it? Because what we don't want to see, especially in the finals or heaven forbid in a grand final, that an umpire feels abused or insulted at something that was said and it changes the course of the game. I think the AFL need to look into this and say, hang on, if that happens, does a 50-metre penalty need to be paid? Because 50-metre penalties are an enormous, enormous impact on the team that gives it away, and it generally results in a goal if it's anywhere centre forward in a game of AFL football.
You're listening to Joel Bowden. It is the Conversation Hour on 774 ABC Melbourne. We're talking about the Zach Butters decision of last night. Also, one principle, one speculation that Jack Anderson brought up before Joel is that, as you say, it was a comment that went to the integrity of an umpire. So, and we don't know this because we don't know the reasoning, the AFL might have been saying, look, it's a serious enough thing that, and we are going to believe you. But on the other hand, because of the lack of mic evidence, we're only going to give a $1,500 fine. What do you think if that's the case?
Well, the fact that the audio is unavailable and Butters is standing within 1 or 2 metres of the umpire is just extraordinary in this case. The other part that we have to talk about is that the umpire works for Sportsbet, and about 12 months ago the AFL cleared it that that was okay, that this umpire works for Sportsbet, works in the racing section of Sportsbet, and that was cleared to be okay. My question is whether or not there's a conscious or an unconscious bias there, because Butters has clearly said he was unaware of the umpire's employment, didn't know that he worked for a betting agency of some description. So,
and we should just to jump in there, Joel, apologies, we should clarify that I think that Nick Foote said that he wasn't suggesting that he had thought that Butters was impugning anything about his job. He was saying that he thought that the implication was that St Kilda or something, someone on the St Kilda side had been paying him. I know that there's a lot of speculation. I'm getting some texts as well that talks about the sports bet conundrum, I guess, that the AFL has almost put Nick Foote into here by allowing him to work in both places. But yes, what you're saying is that that decision is part of the problem in this instance.
Yeah, and it may be an unconscious bias that has now manifest in a 50-metre penalty. Whether it's conscious or unconscious, I don't know. But the fact that Nick Foote works at Sportsbet is one of the reasons why we're having this conversation, is one of the reasons why we're now talking over and over again about what did Butters say to Nick Foote the fact that the AFL ticked it off 12 months ago to say that's okay is one of the reasons why we're having this elongated conversation that says, here is an umpire who's made a decision that no one's heard except him. Yes, the tribunal panel members have believed the umpire's case and not gone with the players. There were two players there, Ollie Wines and Butters. And I think this is a misunderstanding. The fact also that the umpire would not talk to Butters, who is the captain of the Port Adelaide Football Club and is allowed to approach the umpires for clarification, is also an issue that raises its head for me because of that unconscious bias. Now, that's probably because Nick Foote felt insulted, that his integrity was questioned. But so again, I come back to the material impact on the game. If we at some stage have an umpire who's upset at a comment that's been made and it changes the course of the game, then the AFL is going to have a really big issue.
Indeed. So I guess what you're saying there is that decision about Nick Foote being allowed to retain his place as a sports bet racing analyst might have changed his mindset and also the mindset of the players or of the AFL in defending him.
Well, all of the above.
Right.
And as Jack was saying just previously, this is not a court of law. This is a tribunal. And the AFL is able to take the evidence in front of them and make a decision. But they also make it for the broader context of the game, as Jack was saying.
Yeah.
You know, I live in Darwin nowadays. We've just finished our LNTFL season.
Mm-hmm.
And we've actually had a really big change in the umpiring fraternity where we've got more umpires than we've ever had before in the NTFL competition.
Oh, great.
So we're attracting umpires and retention is the biggest thing. So we have to support our umpires. We have to support the umpiring coaches and the umpiring department that look after these young kids who are coming through. And then we have to make sure that the rules are clear. And we also probably have to be open and honest to AFL lovers that umpires make mistakes. Just like players make mistakes every week when someone runs into an open goal and misses. Now,
yeah.
These are the things we have to have the open conversations about, that every now and then there's a mistake. But just like you can't take back that point that you kicked as a player, the umpire is not going to change their mind and decision. The reporting of abusive or insulting language, I think, should probably go to after the game so it doesn't have a material impact on the game itself.
Well, Joel Bowden, we will be waiting with bated breath about the AFL Tribunal's reasoning. Thank you for joining the conversation this morning.
Thank you. Have a good day.
You too. That's Joel Bowden, of course, former player for Richmond, two-time best and fairest. What do you think? Yes, this is just a sporting game, but these principles are getting people riled up. Phil from Mount Waverley, what do you think?
Okay, I think there's a principle in law here that Butters is innocent until he's proven guilty. And I don't think there's been sufficient evidence given to prove his guilt, and therefore the fine is unjustified.
Right.
And I think also, I think back to as a child, we were brought up with sticks and stones might break your bones, but names should never hurt you. And we've become a bit too precious that way.
Names is one thing, integrity is another thing. You don't think we should be protecting the umpires?
I certainly do, but it's a moot point here as to whether the umpire in this case needed
whether
protection.
It was even said. Phil, thank you for calling. And Paul, you've called from Brighton. What do you think?
Oh, hi. I'm an Australian referee in volleyball, and I think this whole confusion could be solved by looking at the volleyball rules, which say no player is allowed to address the referee unless they are captain.
Yeah, same in rugby union.
The captain has to be, as it is in rugby union, very polite, and he must accept the referee's words straight away.
A bit harder on an AFL field if the captain's on the other side of the park.
Well, Jack Butters was absolutely was the captain.
Well, it was in this case, yes, that's true. Paul, that's a really interesting contribution. Thank you very much for this. We will get on to other topics, but lots of talk on text as well. What's the point of having an umpire if they're not listened to? But also, Roger says, let's make it a rule that if the umpire believes he heard something insulting, he wants it to be repeated before reporting the player. Also next, we're going to be talking about the brighter side of another bit of sport, the four Australians who are now going to have their lives changed by being drafted into the WNBA.
On 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Mary Guerin.
Well, would you believe it? Four Australian women have been drafted into the WNBA. Newcastle Saffron Shields, Charlize Dunn, and a Victorian forward, Manuela Puok, or Manny, and also from New South Wales, Amelia Hassett. Now, you may not know those individual players, but this is a path to sporting glory that has been providing household names, not the least of which is Lauren Jackson, widely considered Australia's greatest basketball player, one of the best in the world. She was WNBA pick back in 2001 and, of course, went on to have a super stellar career. And she joins me now to talk about this wonderful development. Thanks very much for joining me, Lauren Jackson.
Thanks for having me.
That's an amazing time, isn't it, for four rising stars to be selected in the WNBA draft? How significant is that, do you think?
Oh, look, it is significant. I mean, having the more Australian, like more and more Australian players over there, obviously, and exposed to that ecosystem and in the WNBA is only great. It's only going to do great things for women's basketball in this country. But I think, you know, for those girls in particular, it's life-changing, you know, to have this opportunity and to go to a WNBA camp. And, there's development player roster spots as well now too. So the WNBA is actively investing in that development pathway. So there's opportunities where there previously hasn't been for a lot of our girls.
Mm. We'll talk about the life-changing aspects in a minute on your own experience as well. But what can you tell us about these four in particular? What have been the standout stories to you that you've seen coming and why they're being rewarded now?
Well, okay, for instance, Manny Poch, she's been in the WNBL for a little while now, a couple of years. Nadia Poch's little sister. So she's, you know, being exposed to the WNBL, but to get into the New York roster or training camp is just such an amazing thing for her. So we've got two sisters, you know, young sisters from Australia over there competing this year, which is incredible. I think the younger ones too will be developed so that they have opportunities to stay in the WNBA and compete as they get older.
And Manuela, when it came to her, apparently her agent told her that interest was low, so she just was watching just in case.
Yeah, I know. I think a lot of people were shocked, I think, when they even saw her name come up. Like, I didn't even know that she was declaring for the draft. So it was really a surprise, but a great surprise. You know, Manny is such an incredible person and she is very talented. So it'll be great to see what she can do in the training camp and whether or not she can make a spot, make a team. And then Amelia Hassett, I think, is the other one that I'll probably just mention. I mean, Saffron Shields, obviously, she's a great young talent from Australia. But Amelia is from our region, from the Riverina. So, and I played with her before she went to college in the NBL1 with the Orurudonga Bandits, and she's been at Kentucky University. So she's got an opportunity with Los Angeles Sparks. She was picked number 33 in the draft. So she also has, you know, another opportunity to make the pros, which is really, you know, it's so exciting for her.
Mm. You're listening to Lauren Jackson, basketball legend. This is 774 ABC Melbourne. When you talked about that life-changing experience, what do you remember as being the biggest shock, the biggest adjustment?
I mean, it's changed a lot now from when I was there, but I think I would say it was very professional even back then. I mean, obviously the money wasn't the same, but it was very professional, you know, going over there to the draft in New Jersey, and my mum was with me, so it was pretty special. But then, you know, moving away from home, I think I was only 19 when I left Australia to play in the WNBA, and it was just physicality of the league. You know, you're playing against the best athletes night in, night out, and that league has grown and grown in the last 30 years. And, I mean, I think there's like 15 teams now in the competition, so there's a lot more games. The stakes are really high and they're just getting higher because of, you know, the women are finally getting paid significant money, which is going to change their lives. So it's great.
How much money can people get in the WNBA?
Well, the Supermax contract's now $1.4 million, which has jumped from like 200,000 in this last collective bargaining agreement cycle. So over this last our summer period, they've been negotiating with the WNBA, and the athletes stood really strong on their business and what they knew that they were worth and everything. And it was sort of the 11th hour kind of scenario, and the deal got done at like 4 o'clock in the morning. And you know, now teams are they've got $7 million to spend on the cap per season. So Supermax is $1.4 million. We've got two athletes that are making that annually now in Ezzie McBeggar and Alana Smith, which is, you know, like beyond anything that we could ever dream of, because it is life changing, and it's incredible that they've got this opportunity now. And it also means too that the girls aren't going to have to play in 2 to 3 seasons per year, you know, trying to make money. They can actually focus on getting their bodies right between seasons. They're going to have money to get the resources and the help that they need to make sure that they've got longevity in their careers. And it really is incredible, and I'm just so happy that they're getting these opportunities now.
You've had a super stellar career and a wonderful life, I know, but is there part of you that wishes, you know, you just had been around a little bit later with all of those jewels up for the grabs?
Yes and no. I mean, I think that's just the way the evolution of sport, you know, women's sport in particular. You know, I remember talking to my mum when I was growing up about the opportunities that she had, and she'd say to me, you know, you've got so much more opportunity now. There's so much more you can do in the sport. And it's true. I mean, her generation paved the way for us to be able to come in and get paid. And then we've sort of paved the way for the next generation to come in and say, nah, it's time. Like, it's time to actually build this thing. And I mean, the NBA, men's sport has been the same. You know, it does grow and it does evolve. And the whole point of being an athlete is leaving the sport in a better situation than what you came into it in, you know. And I feel like it's over the generations that's been done. So I think I certainly am very happy for the girls. I'm very proud of them. I think, you know, what they're sort of stepping into is something, it's extraordinary, you know, and it's for the next generation of kids coming through. I mean, you can only imagine what sort of contracts they're going to be getting, and the representation and the visual pathways now that kids have to dream and actually be able to, you know that they can make a living out of this, even if they just get that one big contract, you know, it's life changing. So yeah. Is there a part of me? Yeah, I don't know. I've got my kids. I'm pretty happy. But like, I mean, you know, it's amazing.
Yeah. And apropos all of the generational giving back as well to the community, you're back in Albury. Back where it all began, where your parents, as you mentioned, who both played at the highest levels as well, started your career. Tell us what you're doing there. You've got the Lauren Jackson Sports Centre officially reopening this year, and you're also with the Bandits again.
Well, yeah, so I've got a few different roles. So I'm in Albury, raising my kids, my family, and loving, I love Albury. I'm an Albury girl through and through, country kid. But yeah, I've been asked to sort of advise with the Bandits, which is fantastic, and really excited to help get them back on track, you know, and back doing great things in the sport, which they have been doing. But, you know, just to elevate the team a little bit more, I think that'll be great. I do work with the WNBL, Basketball Australia, Project B, which is another global league, about to launch later this year. So I'm doing quite a lot, but I'm really, really fortunate that I'm able to do it from home. Heading to Germany, actually, on Saturday with FIBA. So there's a lot. I'm always on the run. I'm always sort of moving and doing things, but I'm really glad that I get to do it from home.
I bet there'll be so many people listening who are really happy to hear that your life is kicking on and you're still so busy. Lauren Jackson, thank you.
No worries. Thank you.
The ever busy Lauren Jackson. 4 stars. Is it an Aussie mafia in the WNBA? Let's just call it that. It's 17 minutes to 12. We will be talking about AI again. Look, I know it's affecting all parts of our lives. A little while ago, we were talking about AI interviewing you for a job. And do you trust that? Well, there are reports that Mark Zuckerberg is working on an AI version of himself so he can answer the queries of all of his employees. Would you want an AI boss instead of your own real life version? I'd love to hear from you. 1300 222 774 is the number to call, or 0437 774 774 is the number to text. Would that change your job? Would you prefer it? Would it make a better relationship with your boss? Or are we all having to create clones of ourselves in the workplace? I'm going to be digging into that next. But your texts have still kept coming in on the AFL Tribunal's call last night to believe Nick Foote, the umpire, over Port's Zach Butters. This from Matt in Bendigo, who is a former member of an AFL Central Victoria Country Tribunal. Matt says, in my opinion, the AFL and the Tribunal got the decision right. Back in my day when there was no audio and no video available, our decisions were then based on whoever put forward the stronger case at the time, and the Tribunal would always base their decisions or findings on the balance of probability. Yes, Matt, that's true, but now the conversation is moving on to whether we should have more microphones rather than going back to basics. We can't really wind that one back, can we? And Linda from Mount Martha says, a lack of respect doesn't happen in netball. The players are taught from an early age, umpire correct, move on play. Yes, I guess it just depends on whether or not the player is adamant that they didn't say that thing. And this from Tess, I think, is a great way to sum this up. The Butter Saga, I'm just glad the heat's off Carlton this week. Shout out to all of the Carlton supporters there. It's 11:45. Would an AI boss be better in your life?
On 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Mary Guerin.
And it is The Conversation Hour. Would an AI boss be better in your life? Ross, who's on the panel today, is saying, could it be worse? Ross, I'll tell your boss about that, because it's been reported that Mark Zuckerberg, who is Meta's founder and chief executive, is working on an AI version of himself, being trained on his mannerisms and tone, to help out his almost 80,000 employees. What does this mean? Is this the beginning of the end for humans in the workplace when your boss isn't even real? I want to know, would this actually change your relationship with your boss? Would you prefer it? 1300 222 774. Here to talk about it is Angus Kidman, who's a tech journo. Thanks for joining us, Angus.
Thank you.
What did you think when you heard about these reports?
Well, it's not surprising. We know that Meta has been really keen on this idea of building kind of, you know, virtual avatars, getting into that whole kind of space, and also wants to be seen as competitive in AI. So it makes sense that they'd be exploring this area, and it makes sense when you've got a really high-profile, visible CEO like Zuckerberg. Lots of people would like to have him in their meetings at Meta, but of course he can't go to all those meetings because there's not enough time. So if there's an AI clone version of him that can kind of offer some realistic feedback and get that appearance of talking to and listening to people, that's potentially beneficial for the business. So it makes sense to me that they're going to try it. How well it succeeds and how well it goes off is a whole separate question, but it's a direction that, yeah, Meta's gone in, and I can imagine other large tech companies would go in as well.
Angus, this just strikes me as so strange that if there are these pods of workers who want to hear the boss's opinion, that would mean, as all these LLMs are based on already known opinions, that boss is feeding in. Let's say that means Mark Zuckerberg has to feed his opinions into this bot, which means that those employees will never get an original thought, will never be able to change the boss's mind. Is that how it would work?
There is certainly that risk of it not changing the boss's mind. I get the impression, from what we know about Zuckerberg, that he's probably not someone who changes his mind very much. So maybe that doesn't shift it as much in practice as we think. But yes, by definition, the system is only going to kind of resynthesize things that have been absorbed before. So it's not necessarily going to be immediately persuaded, but you can build the tone into say, I haven't thought about that. We'll put that on notice and add it to the record. So it doesn't have to be that it's an automatic blocker and it's only going to go with things you like. It sort of depends on what they're looking for, the outcome. Are they looking for genuine, honest feedback that could then go back into the business, or are they just trying to reassure their staff? And I think you'd come up with different systems depending on what your goal for having this AI is.
Mm. You're on 774 ABC Melbourne. It's the Conversation Hour. Angus Kidman, Tech Journo, is with us. We're talking about AI bosses. This from Stu in Mernda. Mary, I could have sworn that Mark Zuckerberg was already an AI bot. Angus, I think a lot of people reading this story will be concerned about AI, and there's that angle, but also it does add to this idea and this reputation of Meta. Do you think that this is going to be convincing people that the Meta brand is really losing it? Or the opposite?
I don't know that it's going to shift the needle much in either direction. As you say, lots of people have very strong feelings about Meta, often quite profoundly negative. And I think those people just go, well, this is just more of them doing something that's really insane. Equally, they're certainly not the only business pursuing this. So we're going to see this from the mainstream AI players and the big traditional tech companies like Microsoft. They're all exploring this world of at least having AI versions or things that are like humans. Maybe it's not as ambitious as going into work meetings, but the notion of having an AI agent that might be able to ring up and make an appointment or change an appointment for you, that's actually become surprisingly commonplace. And so some people will get enthused by that aspect of it. They might say, well, I don't want an AI boss, but an AI replica of myself that could just do the awkward hanging on the phone for an hour while I wait for my phone company to respond. Yeah, I think people can see the benefit of that. So hopefully they can be a bit more nuanced than going, it's not all evil, it's not all good. It depends on what problem it's actually solving for you and potentially what kind of threat it might represent to your current lifestyle.
Yeah, and I want to get to a text that talks about cloning ourselves in real life, but before we leave the workplace, do you think that this could lead to a strange sort of ecosystem where employees themselves then have clones of themselves so the boss can interview themselves? The avatars can talk while the humans go and do something else.
You can end up in that version. We already do have AI systems, maybe not with sort of human faces. They'll do a lot of interacting with themselves, generating responses, and then sort of throw those against other responses and try and work that out. So there's an aspect of AI that is very like this, where you suddenly go, there's a lot of discussion happening amongst the AIs without the humans getting involved. There still tends to need to be a point of what is often called the human in the loop. At some point, you can come out with these things, but someone has to look at it and go, that's a good idea, that's a bad idea. We haven't yet got to the point where it would make sense to just say, no, let's just let them make the decision and do nothing about it. But it's still something that, rightfully, we should be worried about if we ever get to that point.
Exactly. Paul, you've called in from Cranbourne. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm not so interested about the opinion. I'm concerned about or interested in the decision-making. And so, yes, I can clone the CEO, say, and I can get their opinion, but I want them to come to a point of actually making a decision. And so then who is responsible for that decision? The clone CEO or the real CEO? I want a clone, I want an agent, a CEO, agentic CEO that actually makes a decision that is valid and real and goes forward.
In other words, Paul, you'd see a role for AI cloning of your boss if it came to just information, but when it comes to decision making, that's off limits?
No. I want if you're going to have a clone of the CEO, yes, I'd get his opinion any time, but I actually want a decision.
Right, and you'd...
So I want this agentic CEO to actually make, legal decisions, in the line of the duties of a CEO.
You trust the avatar to make those decisions?
But if they're going to have... If the CEO wants to have his avatar, then he's got... just the opinions, it's the decisions as well.
Oh, interesting concept there, Paul. Angus, what do you think about that? Is that likely?
It's definitely possible. And it's a rational way of looking at it. It's like, if you're committed to saying this is actually me, then you should potentially be willing to say, if I've trained it well enough, why can't that actual decision get made? Why can't I actually get feedback on that rather than just a reassuring, oh, yes, that's nice, we'll take it on board, which is, to be fair, what a lot of human CEOs would say in exactly that scenario. Mm. So, yes, if you've given the right level of input and if you said, look, this is the way we think our business is going, if you think that's useful, then you potentially should be willing to trust in that. And if as a business you're not willing to trust in that, then you probably need to be clear about this is exactly what the capabilities are. And I guess that's what it comes down to, that it's easy to say, right, we're going to have, you know, the AI Zuckerberg. There needs to be really clear description of this is what it can do and this is what it doesn't do, so that if you set people's expectations of it, then hopefully you're going to get better outcome than if you just say, well, let's just see what happens. So I think those things do need to be defined. You can't just go, well, here's the agentic CEO. You've got to be able to say, right, this is what they're capable of doing and this is what we won't let them do.
Mm. And just a final question to you, Angus. So this from Kate in BlackRock, saying she's come out of, you know, 20 years in corporate under a toxic boss to the point of PTSD, should I say, and maybe having an AI boss could take the personality misalignments out. Is there an argument to say it's good HR to have AI?
It could be if you've got it, definitely. If you've had that toxic boss scenario, you might be happy to say, well, I've got something that is working off some clearly established principles and actually sticks to them. Whether that happens, we'd have to wait and see. AI has tended to try and be people-pleasing. It'll often say what you want to hear, and that's not always a quality.
Oh, don't we all want that in a boss?
It'd be nice for them to say nice things to us, but realistically, they're going to have to make tough decisions sometimes. So I think there's things that we could get better consistency in an AI potentially, but you've got to set it up correctly. Otherwise, you might end up with a toxic AI boss, and then you'd feel even more powerless.
Indeed. We just want the obsequious ones for those salary negotiations. Angus Kidman, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
Angus Kidman, tech journo, and Tony from Woodside said, I'd like to AI myself so I can answer questions for my grandchildren. That's a lovely idea as well. Paul from Vermont, you wanted to weigh in for a very last word on the umpire situation, the Zach Butters call?
Yeah, just quickly, AI in umpiring.
Good-o.
Look, I just wondered, there's an old saying in sport, what happens on the field stays on the field. And it might not always apply, but if the umpire were to say to the player, give him a chance to repeat the comment, it can de-escalate the issue straight away. And if the player's prepared
to say it again
and try it again, well, all power to the tribunal. But I just think it would just give a chance for a situation a heated discussion, a heated moment to, be managed between umpire and player.
Yeah, you think it's worth giving a bit of grace to the player to take it back?
Well, and the umpire.
And the umpire.
They're both entitled to respect, aren't they?
Indeed. Paul, that's a very good note to end on. Thanks, everyone, for that conversation. I can still see texts coming in. And about AI as well, Neil says, ask my AI boss to open the pod bay door. It didn't work out so well. Thank you very much for joining me today on the Conversation Hour. Listen again on the ABC Listen app and join me again tomorrow. Have a great day.